It is time to bring in our friends from South County, Massachusetts, the Berkshire Edge, theberkshireedge.com, as a matter of fact. And we go Berkshire Edge live on air this morning once again. Marcy
well,
and David,
more or
good
less
morning.
Alive. I don't know. You could argue about that.
You could argue about anything, but let's not.
That's right.
True.
Well, you know what's...
If you knew our condition, you wouldn't argue.
Oh, boy. Well, I got a feeling we know it very well.
Anyways. Yeah, what, more opera?
No, not this week.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny, the first thing that you list here, Jill and I were just talking about five pot shops in the Berkshires. That if you take the long view, you realize that once these all open up at once, visit them as much as you can, because sooner or later
they'll either merge or you'll attrition.
The long view is you're going to have only one or two left.
Probably, yeah. Well,
we're talking about the five that are in Great Barrington or about to be in Great Barrington.
And you're not even including
and
the
one. And there's one, you know, nearer you, of
in
course.
Sheffield.
You
we're not talking about even
so
Sheffield,
far.
Right.
Yeah, so that's
Sheffield. I mean, it's just across the border.
So it's like, so that's like six pot shops, really, within...
But what happens, I mean, can you, if you come from Connecticut and you buy pot in Massachusetts, can you take it back into Connecticut?
They're not preventing you from taking it back in Connecticut, but if you have over a certain amount, and I'm not sure what it is, if you have over a certain amount on you, you can be qualified as a dealer of marijuana.
Which is inefficient.
But if you have just a small amount, it's applicable to being like a traffic ticket. It's not a huge. It's, as long as you're not stoned in the car, it's not a huge fine.
Right.
So.
Right.
So that's the way it is in Connecticut. It's like everything. It's convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
And but the same thing in New York, man. And it's not stopping people from crossing the lines, because obviously the line in Great Barrington has not shrunk at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, this was an interesting story. I mean, this is an issue of social justice came up before the select board in Great Barrington with the issuance of yet another license for a woman who's opening up a shop to sell marijuana in the Wild Bird store just south of town. We have a nice picture of it on our site here. It's interesting that this issue of social justice is arising. People are concerned that one of the select board members, Kate Burke, brought it out that the social justice, the legalization of marijuana was to kind of mitigate the crackdown on poor people who are. You know, possessing marijuana, she points out that's one of the issues is that now that it's been legalized, it's become very expensive, and so she claims that the legalization was an attempt to fix a broken criminal justice system, as she put it. So Great Barrington has really become a kind of hot shop center, you know.
But now, of course, the question comes up whether it really will serve social justice. I mean, the whole point about social justice blacks and blacks, Latinos, and generally minority groups were being arrested in outsized proportions, and so now that would keep them out of the criminal justice system.
Right.
But the other argument is that this is just a way for people who already have money, because it takes at least $1 million to, according to this select person, at least $1 million to. You know, to apply for and establish a marijuana shop. So, minority people for whom it's you know, this social justice can't get in on the act.
Well, I think there's two things here. First of all, how the hell did that woman at the Wild Bird Shop come up with $1 million would be my first question.
She didn't. No. She was selling the shop.
Oh, okay.
Somebody else came in.
I was going to say.
They bought her building.
They bought her building.
They bought her building. She was trying to sell this whole thing.
This is the whole thing. A, by legalizing marijuana is the way you take care of the lower income people who don't buy at the pot shops, but who aren't sellers, but who just smoke marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that legalizing marijuana evens that out. Unfortunately, like with casinos, like with everything that makes a lot of money, big business is going to eventually take it over. But also in the long run, prices will come down and they will have to match what illegal distributors are selling it for. Otherwise, they will not succeed.
Right.
You know, the thing that I wonder about is that, you know, the towns, municipalities that host these shops, of course, get a cut of the sales in tax revenues. And I'm wondering whether there's kind of, there's going to be a kind of dependency, you might say, by municipal budgets on marijuana.
There's going to be.
It's a kind of fiscal habit.
How could it not?
We're going to be pushers.
You know, when you added legalized gambling, when you added casino gambling in Connecticut, the state now depends on that money in the budget.
What about sports betting?
And now that the sports betting is coming along, the states will depend on that money in the budget. You're absolutely right. It's a cycle that just goes round and round and round.
It's like, you know, the French government is dependent on tobacco sales. I mean, is that good for the health of its people? That, you know, tobacco is heavily taxed. And if people stop smoking, that's the end of a big revenue source for the French.
How about forget France?
Yeah.
Pardon?
I said, how about forget France? What about here?
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same thing here. How about here? The tobacco companies diversified, and tobacco, the companies that were just plain tobacco companies at one time, now owned food companies and food and canning companies and stuff like that, because they had to diversify over the long run to lower the impact of their tobacco business. It's really weird when it comes to gambling, when it comes to marijuana, when it comes to anything like that, states become extremely dependent on it, very dependent on it. And you know, it kind of takes the excuse out of managing your budget. It really does. I mean, because all of a sudden things get out of whack in states, and like in Connecticut, when we added lottery,
right.
It was meant to go to the education budget. Doesn't. Goes to the general fund. When gas tax, meant to go what? To transportation. Where does it go? General fund. Everything now goes to the general fund, and that's because they're so dependent on this.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same.
That's what I wonder.
Yeah.
No, they're setting themselves up for, this kind of addiction, you might say.
Absolutely, along with alcohol, you're absolutely right. It's a double-edged sword. And what is the answer to it? Well, obviously common sense, but common sense doesn't always prevail.
No, what common sense? There is no common sense.
Not anymore. All right. Let's go on to something that is well-deserved, and she's quite a woman and quite a person. Tina Packer is going to be honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yes, she is. She was in Prague recently. She's the founding artistic director of Shakespeare and Company up in Lenox, and she was given a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Shakespeare Theater Association, which is a worldwide organization of national and international organizations supporting the best practices in Shakespeare production. So it's quite an honor for her, and she really deserves it. Shakespeare and Company is just splendid.
It is.
And She's built it up from an idea, really, that she and several other of actors and directors had, and including her late husband Dennis Krausnick,
recently
deceased. Yeah, just died. But they started over at the Lennox in the Mount. And they rented the space there, and in fact, I remember very well sitting out on the lawn of the Mount and watching *Midsummer's Night's Dream* being performed outside, and the actors, as you may remember, it takes place in a forest. Well, the actors were in the trees, literally. it was really quite wonderful, but. They've come a long way since then. They have their own campus in Lenox now, and it's quite a performance and educational center for people who love Shakespeare, and they also do other plays, of course, and they have a terrific educational program for area high schools. In fact, high schools in Connecticut, New York, and as well as in the Berkshires.
It's amazing what they do there. And anybody who's been in the business, whether it's broadcast or print, that's interviewed Tina Packer, comes away with how complete a person this is, not only with her love of Shakespeare, not only with her love of what she's done, but also giving back to the community and to the people around her. She really, and if you interview her, she's just a dynamite. She's a dynamo.
Well, she's been doing this for some time. Yeah. I mean, in fairness, she's absolutely worked. She's worked hard, and she deserves.
Well, she's earned this award.
That's the word I was looking for. Earned it.
Yeah, she is. She's terrific. And as I say, one of the best things about her is that Shakespeare and Company is their outreach to students in this area, high school students, and they put on plays in the fall. And it's quite a festival of plays that these area high schools put on. And it gives students a real experience of what Shakespeare is all about. And rather than just reading them, you actually memorize the lines and act it. You know, it's really wonderful, and that's what she's been able to do. So
an amazing woman.
And good natured and community dedicated. You know, she's always got a sense of humor. She's fun to be with.
She's a bundle. A bundle of energy is the way I like to describe when you speak to her.
Right.
You can't have, after you interview Tina Packer, you come out feeling good about things. Really?
Yeah.
You pull up your bootstraps and you get to work. So that's always good.
Right.
So we can go from Tina Packer, who's done an amazing job, of course, with Shakespeare and Company, but to another treasure in our area, and a different note, that Tanglewood, Brian Wilson, who's had a life of ups and downs of his own, is coming back.
Yes,
that's right. We have a preview of a concert named that Brian Wilson, ex of the Beach Boys. He has a band, and they're going to do what they call Pet Sounds. And he appeared last year at Tanglewood, and with sold out concerts, and he's returning. This coming season. So we're all looking forward to that. Anyways, he's back with his music, the Pet Sounds, and which created an album that Rolling Stone magazine described as the number two album of all time. How about that?
Did you remember it? You're old enough.
Let's think about that.
What's number one? It must be a Beatles.
I think they visited your pot shots up there.
Well, I'm sure they will be visiting them. That's true.
Right.
But in any case, it's Tanglewood is going to be quite lively this this summer.
Right.
And we're just getting a little hints of what's going to be going on. But this is a good one.
All right. Your next story.
Actually, tickets are already on sale.
Yeah, they're on sale.
Oh, yeah.
For everything.
This concert, by the way, for those who want to know, are June 16th.
All right. All people care about is when James Taylor's going to be there. And the 4th of July.
Which is the 4th of July. Yep.
And the 4th of
July.
And also the Tanglewood on Parade. Speaking about giving back to the community, Tanglewood on Parade is an amazing day. But anyways, that's a horse of a different color.
Right.
I want to go to the next story about what farmers do when they're not growing greens. It's probably going to be growing marijuana.
No. Story about farmers, what they do in the winter. And by the way, it really created a huge controversy. And it was just, it just really kind of odd, you know.
Explain.
Well, one of the farmers is Sean Stanton, who raises and it was quoted in the article, but he raises cattle and has his animals outside. And this aroused the consternation of people who say, how could you treat animals like that and leave them outside in the winter? And Sean explained that, you know, they do better outside than they do cooped up in a barn. Which is true, actually, but it's people are getting
further away from.
Ask any dairy farmer when they bring the cows in the wintertime, and they keep them inside.
Yeah,
what happens when they open the doors in the springtime to let them out? They just go crazy.
Well, if you give it's the same with horses. Yeah. I used to raise horses, and they you leave them outside. Or rather, you give them an option of being inside or outside, and they choose outside.
They do, and the littlest ones, the little newborns, are out in weather that you wouldn't put, especially in this day and age, you wouldn't put your newborn out in. But you know what?
Right.
That's what they do. But what?
The only thing that you need to protect them from is, is that the if it's a cold rain. That and with wind that can get the rain up under their fur, then then they'll go inside. But basically, they'll stand outside in a snowstorm. You know, you'll see them out there just eating their hay and their backs kind of covered with snow, and that's they prefer it. So. But we had it was quite the it was surprising to me because I thought it was just a nice story about you know what do farmers do with in the winter time, and this aroused all kinds of concern. You know.
Oh, gosh. My gosh.
Anyways.
Well, we only got about 4.5 minutes left. Well, so let's go to Route 7 north of Great Barrington, Stockbridge Road. Planning and Zoning Board. So let's talk a little bit about that, about how they're trying to revitalize that area.
Well, that's an area, if your listeners know, it's north of Great Barrington, and it's the area where the Price Chopper Shopping Center is, and there's a number of businesses along this kind of commercial strip. And it's been having a hard time. There are a number of vacancies, and they're hoping to. The planning board is looking at ways to sustain both the business and residences by making it a more mixed use area. And it's an interesting story because it combines residential and commercial uses. So, but this is a response by a town planning board of to what they foresee as a real issue with that area.
There was a strip of like five or six buildings all in a row, and all for sale, and then one or two on the other side of the street also. And this had been a major commercial area for Great Barrington. It's just north of the town on Route 7 on the way to Stockbridge. And first the Kmart went out of business. Of course, it got replaced by Marshalls, so that saved that shopping center. But the Sears had a store there. There was a knitting store there that attracted a lot of attention. That closed. There was a sandwich shop that closed. I mean, there was, you know, one right after another of stores that were closing. Little by little, it's very difficult to buy anything in Great Barrington, which is another problem. But, you know, you don't want to have a major commercial strip in your town, you know, with all the stores vacant and the buildings for sale. If somebody had bought up the whole strip, they could have done something interesting, like mixed-use housing or something there that would have, you know, given another kind of center to the town. But it's too late now because somebody just bought, and we reported on this last week, Sears building, and this had been an independent owned and operated Sears, the owners, I guess, just gave up, and it has been bought by a local businessman and will be leased to Goodwill Industries, which will move there from up the block. So it's not a new, addition to the community. But, you know, that's right in the middle of this strip, so the possibility of having the whole thing turned into something interesting is gone. But
right.
Still, I mean, there's enough room there for people to start thinking about what we could do there. Because it is sad. I mean, we have a number of vacant stores, and now we have a whole vacant area.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we only have about 35 or 40 seconds left, but the two other stories that we were going to talk about was Robin's Candy Shop, which had a story down in the Wall Street Journal, and also Carol Owens.
The reason is that the local confectioner, Robin's Candy Shop, cornered the market on these little sweetheart neck...
Necco.
They were made by Necco.
Made by New Necco.
England Confectionery Company.
Business.
Yep.
And... she bought up enough of them to last her for a while.
She bought 1,000 pounds.
She bought 1,000 pounds.
We're talking about those little candy hearts that say, you know, you are mine or be mine.
Yeah,
sweetheart or, you know, she
got wind of their going out of business, so she bought up as much as she possibly could so that she could have them in her shop for, even though Necco won't be making them anymore.
Right.
They will be making them
next year, I thought.
They won't be making them for 12 to 14 months, but you know what? They never go bad, so she's good for next Valentine's Day.
She's good for next year.
Yeah, no, they don't go bad.
She can do mail orders, she can do internet orders and everything with them. That was a smart move, actually.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was a smart move.
I wonder how she found out in advance. She's lucky.
Well, through the candy business and the candy business connections. They know these.
Word gets around.
Yeah.
Well, we are, unfortunately, out of time. Totally out of time.
Okay. Well, so then people can read Carol Owens' very interesting article.
Yes.
Yeah, she remembers the Teapot Dome scandal of the 1920s and likens it to what we're experiencing now with the Teapot Trump, you might say.
All right. Well, we'll
he's a blowhard. I guess.
No, you're not saying that at all.
No, I wouldn't say that.
All right. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Okay,
BerkshireEdge.com. All right. Take care,
guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.